The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome back to the ATL Podcast. I'm your host, Matt B. Davis. And yes, I was at the Super Bowl in Miami. What the hell does live interviews from Miami have to do with the ATL Podcast? Well, let me tell you. Last year, Super Bowl was here, as many of you remember. And I got a media pass and I thought, not to the game, by the way, to something called Media Center Radio Row. And when I went there, there was all kinds of interviews to be had. There are people walking around with things to plug. There are people just walking around with different radio stations, different celebrities, various people. And it went so well that I thought, well, shoot, I guess I'll go and do this again in Miami. It's a short flight, right? And not to jump too far ahead, but then next year it's in Tampa. So an even shorter flight. Maybe I'll drive. Who knows? But if you followed my feed, you saw that I saw some legit celebs and spent some time with them, which I suppose I should link, which, you know, just getting a selfie with someone is not that big of a deal. I mean, it's fun for the feed, but it's not really what I would travel there for. But the interviews are, and even getting on my feed, not just a photo, but a short video with someone like a Dana White or a Katie Couric was awesome and worth it. So I'll link those. And so we got about two or three episodes worth of stuff like we did last year. And I can link those in the proverbial notes as well. So on today's episode, we've got cornhole champion Cody Henderson. We've got professional fighter Kayla Harrison, comedian Craig Gass, Michael Smith, who is a veteran on a quest to become the first above the elbow amputee skeleton racer at the Olympics. He has a fascinating story and he was great. And then the one, the only Ron Jaworski, former professional quarterback and now announcer, analyst, really sharp dude who works for ESPN and all the great networks. So this is going to be the first episode of a couple and I hope you enjoy. Away we go.
So I'm Cody Henderson. I'm an ACL pro. I played with the ACL here for the last three seasons. From Jackson, Ohio, small town kid. Living the dream.
And he says you're the best cornhole player in the U.S. And I said, why doesn't he introduce you as the best cornhole player in the world?
Actually, we did win a world championship here this last August. Played against the top Canadian team.
Who's
in the
we?
Final. Me and my doubles partner.
Okay.
It was a doubles championship. Me and my doubles partner, Adam Hisner. We beat the top Canada team in the final. They had knocked out the Australian team prior to that.
Right.
And it was awesome. That was all televised on ESPN. And it was... Nice to tackle one.
And you grew up playing what sport?
What translated me for cornhole was bowling. I bowled as a junior all the way up until I found cornhole, and then I switched over. But I was a basketball athlete, a track athlete in high school as well. I juggled all of that as well. But
were you a Pete Weber fan?
I mean, I don't dislike Pete Weber. I'll tell you that most famous quote he's got of "Who do you think you are? I am." I did watch that tournament live.
So you when that, but I'm sure you didn't grasp it at the time. It just sort of happened, right?
Or
you actually did.
The game itself?
I'm saying when he said that.
Oh, when he said that, he was actually arguing with a fan, and people didn't realize that was it, like right before that happened. A fan said something, and he basically said, hey, can you do whatever? Can you turn your phone up, or can you not reflect your watch, or whatever? And the fan talked back to him after he said that, so he got pissed about it.
Right.
And he kind of like looked over like, are you really not going to get this guy out of here? And then he finished up the tournament and struck out, and then he was angry. And like, so he was like, who do you think you are? I am. Like, I got all the whole context like live in the moment. I was like, I was uncomfortable watching it from thousands of miles away.
So how long have you been playing?
I started in high school. As soon as I got my license and I was able to drive, I started to travel. Like, there was no delay. Once I was out of school on Friday, if I had to drive 4 hours to Cleveland, I'm making the trip. So 12 years now.
To bowl or cornhole? Which one are we talking about now?
This is cornhole. This is cornhole.
Okay, I didn't know there were like leagues until recently. Like I we've all probably seen it on ESPN by now, but to me that's recent.
Yeah. So when I first started, there's always been a little bit, since I started, there's always been a competitive part of this game. It's all been, but they were money chasers. Small, you'd have fundraiser tournaments, you'd have festivals, fairs. They would run these tournaments, say 500 to first for a 16-year-old kid in high school playing all these sports and not having a lot of extra time to go to work or anything. It's like, I'm going to go take that money. Like, that's going to be nice. So I'm going to pack up and make that trip on Saturday and play that tournament, try to win and come back home. But for me, it was go there, get smashed, like 0-2, don't win a game, hardly score any points, go home, be mad about it, come back next week, work harder. And that's what really developed me. And then once I got to college, I became a great player. I really stepped it up, beat a lot of top players within the cornhole community. There wasn't really a league that was outstanding the way the ACL outstands now as far as like the ESPN deal and a lot of media around it. And now we've gotten to the point where we're with the ACL and got a lot of media and a lot of people around it and a lot of the same names and a lot of new names and young guys coming up that are great in the sports growing.
You look to me like a young guy.
I mean, I like to think I'm a young guy, but then I see these kids that are 18, 19.
How old are you?
28.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Do you know anything about obstacle racing?
The only thing I could think of would be like Ninja Warrior.
Okay, so this is sort of like that, except it's outdoors and there's mud instead of just like a big obstacle.
There was something, I can't remember what it's called, but somebody asked me if I would be willing to do that, and it was like a month before the national championships in Valley Forge. And it was, all I was thinking in my head was, because it was like a 3-mile course, I think, and it was like mud and you were going over obstacles and stuff, and I was thinking, why would I want to break my ankle, sprain my ankle right before this here, or, you know, tear my bicep or something trying to do monkey bars and stuff and then, you know, a long course. But I actually have seen some stuff similar to that.
Well, we are a niche sport, okay? And we want, like, when I see sports like yours on television, I'm like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people do obstacle races every year, and we've had a few televised things on ESPN and whatnot, but It floors me when I see it. I'm like, well, dude, cornhole's freaking doing it, and not, I don't think nearly as many people play cornhole. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. At least with our game, is it's a such a simple game, and it's a great tailgating game. And people see the tailgate, they all just want to play. Like, it's so anybody, like the motto of the league is anybody can play, anybody can win, and that's really the truth. Like, there's a reason why it's modeled after that, and it's one of those things. Like, I like to compare the league to bowling to a point, not only because the motion and everything, but when the difference between our games is, say, you want to bowl, you have to go to an alley. Like, if you want to go play cornhole, you can just set up boards in your backyard. Like, if you have boards in your garage, you just haul them out. You call somebody, say, hey, you want to play cornhole? You can set up anywhere. So the luxury of being able to do that, such a simple game. Fans have embraced it. The people that watch ESPN have embraced it. It's so great just to be a part of this and be able to share this game that I love to play.
Do you, oh my God, I totally just lost my train of thought. This is the peaks and valleys of never having any notes. I just like to rip, right? It's fun that way.
Yeah.
But occasionally your brain just completely shuts down, dude.
Yeah, right. I've been there.
What the hell was I going to say?
I can't even remember what I said.
What do you play besides cornhole? Like when you're not, like, do you do anything else?
I have a job. So like,
you have a straight job?
Yeah, I have a job. It's tricky to balance. I mean, I really don't have a lot of free time between work and I put.
Can't you just get a bunch of sponsorships and maybe get some coaching programs?
You know,
that's what the athletes tend to do.
That's definitely the route we're heading in, and I'm loving the progress. I have an equipment sponsor. Local bag company is my equipment sponsor, and they not only provide me with equipment, they help me get to these events and venues and things like that, and I'm very appreciative of them. Been able to work with Johnsonville, who's a sponsor for the league. They've really helped drive our sport. Done some independent stuff with them, but that's really the next step is getting.
Are you forced to eat breakfast brats every day?
I would if Johnsonville was like, Cody, we want you to represent our brand every event for this entire season. I would more than happy. Johnsonville has really good brats. They really do.
All right. So what's going on the rest of the week?
So I think we'll actually be. Back here around the media here tomorrow, and then it'll be time for me to kind of settle in, get ready for the tournament here on Friday. We'll start with the pro doubles, and then we'll move into pro singles, and that'll most likely be on Saturday. Something I've really prepared for. I put a lot of time in coming in to play against these 600 other players, and a lot of players who've also put in a lot of time and playing really well.
What's the tournament style?
What do you mean by style?
Like, is it like single elimination,
it'll
double
be,
elimination?
It'll be a double elimination format. Once it does get down to the final four teams and final four players, it will just be a semifinal one-game single elimination at that point. It makes it cleaner. It makes it more smooth. You have clear winners. It's not as confusing for fans watching to have, like, all this person has to beat this person twice kind of deal. So I do love the format. I really, really do. I think that with the pro field we have this year, because it's ever growing, we've obviously, with the exposure that we had over this past year, more players have come out. I'm excited to take them on and show them what it's about.
All right. Well, good luck, dude.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for talking to me, brother. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Hey, Kayla.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, of course.
Do you even lift, bro?
I know. It's a problem with wearing sleeveless shirts, but we're in Miami. It's like hot as...
No, you have to.
You think so?
So my wife started lifting a couple years ago,
yeah.
And it changed her life.
Really?
So
she loves it?
Oh, yeah. So she's my age, which is 47.
No way. 29.
Kids. I know. Thank you. Three kids. And her friend started doing it, and then she did it, and then she got a coach. And like she is like so... It's like not her thing,
right,
to like be on stage.
Right.
And so it's been like totally out of her comfort zone. Anyway,
that's badass though.
No, it's super badass.
Like, I love that.
No, yeah. Like,
we grow at the edges of our experience, first of all. And second of all, I like to think, like, I'm an addict, but I'm an addict to something that's healthy, you know? So there's nothing wrong with being an addict once you're addicted to something that's healthy.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm a recovering addict to things that aren't healthy, and I'm probably currently an addict to the things that do make me healthy.
See, there you go. You have to turn it into something positive. There's always a spin. We can always find a way to turn it into something good, can't we?
Right.
I think so.
So you started at being athletic at what age?
Well, I started judo when I was 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, before that, I would not say I was athletic.
But a lot of kids, like, start karate or judo or something.
Yeah, right.
Any martial arts at 6.
Yeah.
And then
I put my niece in it. She's 6.
But then they do whatever else.
Yeah,
so
that's
true.
So
at what point was it like, oh, this is it.
You know
this
what?
Is my
I
jam.
I did dance. Like, I did ballet, tap, jazz, hula, and I played t-ball. And then by the time I was 8... I won this little... I didn't win anything. I was not very athletic. I was a little bit of a roly-poly, like a little pudgy. And I did judo for a year. And I remember I saw a picture in my mom's photo album recently. It was like, I was like this like 10-year-old with like traps, you know? Like, it totally transformed my body, my mind, my life. And I remember winning this little local tournament. And I got to stand on top of the podium. And I beat this girl who always used to beat me. And I was like, oh, this is it. Like, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want to... You know, who wants to be an actress? I want to throw people. Like,
really?
This is
like
it.
That, right.
Yeah, and then I started training for real. I mean, I made the Olympic trials for the first time when I was 14. I moved to Boston to train with the Olympic coaches when I was 16. Finally made my first Olympic team at 22. Won the World Championships at 20. Won the Junior World Championships at 18.
Do they even have college programs?
They don't. I mean, it's a club sport in college.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
So did you go to school or did you want to go to school?
Well, I finished high school online, and then I took some classes at Harvard Extension after the Olympics. But I don't have a college degree.
No, that's okay. I was
it's
just curious.
It's something I'm thinking about, but I really don't feel like I need it to do what I'm... Obviously, you don't need it to punch people in the face. Unless I missed that. But.
I'm going to quote you on that. You don't need it to punch people in the face.
That's what I've heard. You don't need a college degree to punch people in the face.
No, because, again, a lot of people experience or have these things, and then they don't know, like this is absolutely what I want to be a professional doing. We're there.
Do you want to know what's even crazier? Is that I thought judo was the love of my life. I thought that was what I was meant to do. And then I started fighting. And I was like, oh my God, I got it wrong. Like, that was just a warm up for this is what I love. This is my jam.
Because why?
So many reasons. Well, first of all, in judo, it's violence, but it's controlled. It's controlled violence, and there are a lot of rules. It's very political. It's very, like, it's prim and proper, kind of. It's rooted deeply in culture. But, like, you can't even grab someone's leg in judo, right? It's a combat sport, but it's not really combat. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't realize that. I used to tell people, oh, you know, I fight in December, you know, because I would have a judo tournament. I used to say that to people. And now I think about that and how ignorant that was of me to say, like, I fight. Bro, no, you don't. You do judo. It's not the same. And MMA is like, it's as close to man versus man as you can get.
It's Jay Glazer.
Jay Glazer, what up? He doesn't remember me.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Hot take.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, what?
Short, squat, really strong guys should wear looser fitting clothes.
Hot take. Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
Like when he's on TV in the suits, you know what
looks
I'm saying?
Great.
No, but isn't it a bit much?
Yeah.
I'm not knocking the guy.
I like Jay.
Do you know Jay?
I did I commentated at a charity event with him a couple years ago.
Okay.
For Fight Night. Fight for Children in D.C.
Right.
The PFL had one of their events there. So
right.
They had, instead of having a boxing match, they had a MMA fight.
He's clearly promoting something. Do we know what this is? What Unbreakable is? It's probably his own personal brand.
Oh, it's his gym. Unbreakable is his gym.
Okay. Where is he out of?
I think L.A.
All right. Well, that's...
Anyways.
We're here to talk about you.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Whenever I see that guy, I'm just like, I don't know. You should just give it a few inches. That's all.
I'm not going to knock it. Listen, I don't even dress myself, okay? Like,
does she dress you?
My friend, who is a stylist, dresses me, okay?
Okay.
I'm not going to knock anybody's choices of outfits, because the first thing people are going to do online to me is criticize me, so.
Good.
I throw no stones.
Okay. That's probably a good way to be.
I try.
All right. So you make the Olympics what year?
I made the Olympics in 2012 and 2016.
Which was London and?
Rio.
And you won the gold in both.
I did.
And is it just like standard kind of weight classes, like boxing or like?
Yeah. So I fought like what you would call like light heavyweight.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was it an easy path to gold? Was it a
Oh my God. No, it's terrible. I mean, one of my favorite quotes about the Olympics is it's not every 4 years, it's every day. You know, so it's not just about showing up.
Because every day you're waking up.
Right. It's every time you think about hitting the snooze button. It's every time you open the fridge. It's every time you want to go see a movie and stay out late, but you don't because you have practice early in the morning. It's like it's every day for the rest of your,
Can we talk about the fridge?
Yeah.
Because I'm a runner.
Okay.
And I started running at like 40.
Okay.
And I could just run off whatever.
Yeah.
Like I could eat whatever, run off whatever. And then
I'm the same way with MMA right now. I eat what I want.
But then the clock, sort of the time ran out on me. And it's all about the fridge, right? And so staying away from stuff
diet
is really
like
hard.
90% of
right.
Health.
It's really hard. It's really, really hard.
I know. It sucks. I'm not looking forward to that. Like, I do not have the best eating habits right now. And I always told myself, it's a lifestyle. Like, change your lifestyle so that when you do stop competing and you aren't training 2 to 3 times a day, you know, you have a healthy lifestyle.
Right.
So you don't become unhealthy, but man, it's just hard. If you're going to the gym and sparring and getting literally head kicked, sometimes you want to come home and have an M&M cookie. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you're like, I put on my Winnie, my unicorn onesie, and sometimes I just need to have like an M&M cookie and like have a good cry about like, you know.
But if I could stop at one M&M cookie, I would. That's the problem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a problem. No,
you can stop at one?
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I don't know how you do that.
The desire to win, my desire to succeed, out easily outweighs any other desire I have ever had. Almost more than the desire to sleep or breathe or anything.
But how soon near like a fight do you have to get into like fight like mode?
I mean, I don't cut weight. So I walk around about 10 pounds. Like if I eat whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want, I walk around about 10 pounds over the weight class that I fight.
And then you don't cut? I thought that's the whole thing.
No, but I mean, we're talking about MMA. MMA fighters cut like 40 pounds, 30 pounds.
In the fight game, I thought that's half the game.
Well, so the PFL created a 155-pound weight class. So they made a weight class for me. Not just for me. I mean,
but so you don't have to fuck. Because again, I thought the whole point was you get to that point where you can end up outweighing your opponent by a gazillion pounds.
I think that's really stupid and really dangerous. Okay, let's talk about this for a second.
But isn't that what people do? Isn't that the game?
Yes, that is what they do. But I don't do it. I'm changing the game. Yeah,
good for you.
Thank you.
Just broke my computer. Good for you.
Think about this, okay? So your brain, you're stepping into a cage and you're getting punched in the head with 4 ounce gloves. Okay, 4 ounce gloves. That's little. That's not what boxers use.
No.
It's little. It's tiny.
Boxers have big old gloves.
You know, it's a game of inches here. What protects your brain? Water. You protect your brain, but inside, the stuff that's inside between your skull and your brain is water. So you're telling me that the week that you fight and you step inside of a cage and they lock the door and they say, okay, do everything but like poke each other in the eyes, you're going to deprive your body of 30 pounds of water, dehydrate your body that much, and then 24 hours later step inside a cage.
Yeah, that's nuts.
And expect to perform at peak levels. I don't believe in that. I don't believe
in
that.
And
I think it's an unhealthy message to send to our kids. I think it's terrible.
But it seems so common sense, yet it's allowed. Is there any way to
if I ran the show, but I don't. You know, I think there needs to be more opportunities. So I think there need to be more weight classes. I think for women especially, there need to be. Women's MMA is the fastest growing sport in the world. There are only a couple weight classes. You know, in judo, there are 7 male weight classes and 7 female weight classes. Everything's completely equal. And I hope that by creating this 155-pound weight class and by trying to get some buzz and all this going around, that slowly fans... The problem is it's an entertainment. So people are like, oh, we don't want to see big girls. And I'm like, oh, listen, big girls... let me tell you something. America is not full of just straw weights, okay? That's not how it works. There are big women all over the world doing all kinds of badass things. So, I don't know. I hope we shatter that ceiling and we start to get more female weight classes.
Do you have a fight coming up?
I just re-signed with the PFL, so I think the season starts in May. I don't have anything scheduled yet, but I'll be fighting hopefully in May.
And tell people what the PFL is.
The PFL is a professional fighters league. It's on ESPN. It is not the UFC. It is not Bellator. It is a promotion, but this is a promotion that is based completely... It's about the fighters, so the destiny is in the fighters' hands. It's not about who talks the most trash. It's not about who looks the prettiest. It's not about who has the biggest name. Literally, if you want to be successful in the PFL, you have to win. It's a sport format. It's a tournament format. So it's like the NFL. So you have 3 regular season fights. You get points based on how you perform in those fights. If you're in the top 8, you go to the playoffs. So the playoffs is 2 fights in 1 night. If you win
2 fights in 1 night, that sounds hard.
I know. I mean, the girls didn't. My weight class didn't get to do it this year. We didn't have enough competitors. But the men all fight twice in 1 night. It's terrible. I can't even imagine what that's like. Then if you win that, you go and fight for the title. And if you win the title, you win the title and you win $1 million. But guess what? I just won a title and $1 million. I'm back in the regular season. Like, it's like being the Patriots. You don't just get to go automatically to the Super Bowl again the next year, you know? Like,
but you can go to Whole Foods and spend a lot of money on groceries.
I sure can. Well, actually, I can't even do that. I put all my, I mean, I'm, my money is put away somewhere safe where Kayla can't make bad decisions.
That's good, because there's a lot of broke athletes out there.
I know. I don't want to be one of them. Listen, I've been broke before. So, I don't want to be broke again.
So $1 million is not small. Is the sponsor? Are the sponsors putting that up? Who's putting that up?
Yeah, we have investors. You know, I mean, we have a lot of big name investors in the PFL. They're doing a great job. Don Davis, who's the chairman of the board, is doing a great job. Our CEO Pete Murray has really trying to take this global and expand it. And I don't know exactly how much money they have, but they're doing a great job. I'll tell you that.
All right, I'm gonna ask a couple more things. I'm gonna have her take a photo though while you're talking to me.
So okay.
You can do a sweet in action photo.
Okay.
Awesome. So you're not going to fight until May.
Unfortunately, I know. It's a long layoff for me.
Right?
I fought 4 times last year, so.
That's a lot? I mean, I know boxers fight like a year, once a year, maybe twice.
Yeah, four is a lot.
Right. And like, what do MMA fighters usually do?
I mean, I feel like active ones fight maybe, it depends on where you are. You know, like if you're a champion, you probably fight twice in a year, maybe.
Right.
If you're not a champ and you're an amateur, you fight six times a year, 10 times a year.
Do you currently have any kind of fighting, meaning boxing or MMA heroes right now?
I mean, I respect a lot. I train at the best gym in the world. I train at American Top Team. It's an hour north of here. You walk in that door and it's just dripping with excellence, you know? So I fight under the best roof there is to fight under. I mean, GSP was always someone I looked up to a lot, George St. Pierre. I feel like he did it the right way as a true martial artist. Frankie Edgar, I'm a big fan of. Again, I feel like he did it the right way. You know, he has like,
heart. You mean instead of just knocking people out? Because that's what some people like to do. Like, they're not martial artists. They just can knock you the fuck out.
No, I don't mean like, I just mean as their personalities. Like, obviously, I like their fighting. GSP is a genius, you know what I mean? So the way he fought was very smart. But just their personalities, you know, like the...
What's the wrong way then? I'm just trying to get at what you mean.
I don't know. I mean, the wrong way is like to talk shit and be like, blah, blah. I don't know. Like, I would never. Okay, I would.
But isn't that part of it? Isn't gamesmanship part of the fight game?
Well, that's part of the entertainment.
Right.
But that's why I like the PFL, because I don't have. You know what's entertaining? Me stepping in the cage and doing what I'm supposed to do. Why do I have to talk shit? I shouldn't. It's a sport. Do you see NFL players out there like talking mad?
Some of them do.
Well, yeah, that's their choice. My choice is to do my talking in the cage, to let my work speak for itself. Be so good they can't ignore you. That's it.
Right?
Yes. Yes, queen.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying... Listen, the problem is that my personality, I am naturally a trash talker. Like, in the gym, I'm very loud. I'm outgoing.
Right.
I enjoy back and forth. But I'm a professional. My background is in judo. The first thing you do in a judo match is bow to your opponent, to show respect, to say you're ready, and to give thanks. You know, those are the reasons you bow. So for me, I don't ever want to have to, like, fight someone, and I would never want to have to fight someone and hate them, or, like, pretend to hate them, or pretend. I want to do it my way. I want to be true to who I am as a person. And I feel like sometimes people sell their soul a little bit for the dollar or for the glory or for whatever.
Right.
And I get it. It's business. It's your own prerogative. Do what you got to do. But that's just not my way.
All right.
I'll talk trash if I really want to talk trash. But I'm going to do it my way.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. That's it. My rant is over. Sorry.
Good talk.
Yeah. Great talk.
So how are you, dude?
I'm doing good, man. How are you? I'm excited. I just said hi to one of my favorite players of all time, Michael Bennett.
Oh, it's Craig Gass, ladies and gentlemen, by the way.
Hey, I'm a comedian, everybody. I'm usually funny.
Comedian Craig Gass, ladies and gentlemen.
And so I just said hi to Michael Bennett, who I love. I haven't seen him in a while. And
from the Seahawks, Michael Bennett?
Yeah, Seahawks, Michael Bennett. And he's always been great to me over the years. I film content with the Seahawks every year at their training camp.
Are you from there?
From New York, but I've been a diehard Seahawks fan for over 26 years now, and I go to training camp every year to get playful stuff for the players to put on.
Did you go back to like the Dave Craig days?
I started during a really dark period for the Seahawks in 1993 when there was a guy named Rick Meyer at quarterback, and holy shit, did that suck. That was
the Seahawks were bad forever.
And I got in because I had never been to a professional football game, and I don't even know if I would even consider myself a big football fan. But in 1993, I'm doing stand-up comedy in Seattle. I moved there. I think I'm funny enough to try to pursue this.
Right.
And so I'm in Seattle, and a guy who I went to high school with, who was a total success story, badass football player, his name is Michael Bates. He was an amazing athlete. He actually, right before I started doing stand-up, I remember being at my mom's place. I'm still living with my mom in my early 20s. And I got the Olympics on in the background. And I hear Bob Costas say, that's Michael Bates winning the silver for the United States.
You don't have a Costas impression?
And, yeah, my Bob, I do, but it's a whole other story. But I said, I'm sitting there in my underwear playing solitaire. I was eating a frozen pizza, and there were, like, pizza crumbs on my belly. And I'm looking at
thank you for that disgusting visual.
Michael Bates is getting a medal in the Olympics, and
right.
I just remember thinking, I got to do something with my life. This is terrible. And when I get to Seattle, Bates gets picked up by the NFL. He's a kick returner for the NFL, and I'm like, dude, I'm going to watch. It was the day after Christmas. I think I did a ton of coke on Christmas, and then the day after, I'm a little hungover, and I bought a ticket to go see the Seahawks play the Steelers on December 26th of 1993. And when I get there, the Seahawks suck so bad that there's just people are just giving away tickets. There's like tons of guys with tickets in their hands standing in front of the Kingdom. You walk up to one guy and you go, how much do you want for your tickets? And one guy goes, give me $40, man. And then the next guy goes, give me 20. Another guy goes, give me 10. And then one guy jumps in and goes, buy me a beer. I trust you. Put it in your hand. Put it in your hand. I trust you. Just buy me a beer. Just buy me a King beer. I trust you. And I walk in. I bought a guy a beer. And I'm like, all right, I'm in the game. And I realized, dude, it's really easy to watch the NFL in Seattle. And I started going,
and that's what made you a hardcore fan.
Well, because it started with a nice thing to do on a Sunday is go see the Giants, the Packers.
Right. That's how people used to feel about being Clippers fans, right? Just like, hey, go watch whoever.
Professional basketball.
Right. Whoever's,
we're watching professional
whoever's
basketball.
Whoever's in town.
Right.
But now the Clippers are legit.
And that was it, is that it's like, where is, like, this is something fun that goes on every other Sunday in Seattle. And the Kingdom had an open food policy where you can bring any food you want in the Kingdom. There's a Taco Bell right across the street from the Kingdom.
So that's what you would do.
$5, you get a giant bag of Taco Bell. Another $5, you can get a ticket, walk inside the Kingdom.
That's a good time.
In the middle of the winter, you're indoors. You get a whole section to yourself. You can make a picnic. You can spread all your food out,
that sounds
make a
amazing.
Picnic, and get the newspaper. You're kind of chilling out for an afternoon. And every once in a while, the Seahawks would win a football game, and you'd have a mouthful of Taco Bell going, did we just win? What the fuck? Like, and this sad little team was just like, it was just close to my heart. They were just this sad sack of shit that would play football at home every other week that I became a fan of. And as they started to get good, it was like, oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, when they got really good with Russell, this phenomenon happened where it's like, man, it's like a band that I knew before anyone knew them.
Right.
And now everyone's a fan. It used to be that the only time you would see somebody wearing a Seahawks anything, hat, shirt, whatever, was within 2 blocks of the Kingdom on a Sunday when the game was happening.
Right.
And now you get off a plane in Seattle, there's grandmas, there's babies, everybody's wearing Seahawks gear. So, and I get it. But that's my team, man. I'm really emotional. And the way the Seahawks play on Sunday genuinely affects my mood for the next 7 days. I'm so emotionally invested in it that it really makes or break my next 7 days. So I love that team, and they mean a lot to me. But I also love football, which is why I'm here at the Super Bowl every year.
All right. So do you have some Bob Costa story that you can or can't tell me?
It's just a story about how great he was, and it actually is a story about Sam Kinison.
Which you know I love from last time we spoke, if you remember.
Oh, that's right, because he had the stories that he told you.
Well, no, I made you do Sam, because I'm a huge Sam fan, and I was saying how when you were on Howard, no one did Sam, and you fucking nailed it, and I was in my car dying.
Yeah, but I told you the Bob Costas story, right?
No, not then.
I never told you that one?
No.
So Bob Costas,
and I'm a huge Bob Costas fan. Huge.
Well, Bob Costas used to do a late-night show.
Right.
And it would be on NBC. It was Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, followed by Dave Letterman, Late Night with Dave Letterman, followed by a show called Later.
Right.
Bob Costas.
I watched McCartney on there.
Oh, yeah.
I watched Dennis Leary on there.
Yeah.
I taped him with my VHS.
Dude, Costas, every guy that sat down, every guy or girl that sat down to be interviewed by Costas, at some point in the interview would say, jeez, how'd you know about that? They were all blown away by the research that Costas did. And then one night he says, tonight my guest will be Sam Kinison. And I'm like, what the fuck is Bob Costas going to know about Sam Kinison? There's no way he's going to know anything. And Sam sits down, and Bob Costas actually says to him, not only does he know him, Bob Costas says, Sam, I used to watch you back at the Comedy Store back in the early 80s. Yeah. And back then, your entire act was based on that day's obituaries. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? This guy's funny, but he's never going to be famous because he's too dark. And Sam Kinison went, wow. And Sam explained, oh my God, I haven't even thought about that.
Right.
And Sam Kinison explains that his early act was he would get on stage and go, hey, folks, my name's Sam Kinison, and I want to thank you guys for coming out. Thanks for supporting stand-up comedy. I'll tell you a couple people you won't be seeing here tonight, and he'd whip out the obituaries from the newspaper that day, and he'd start reading off, like, Esther Goldberg. No, she didn't catch the bus. She's not here. But apparently, if you want to see Esther's work, it's going to be on display this Sunday at Evergreen Mortuary. It was dark. Oh, yeah, it was so dark, yeah. So it was a really crazy dark piece, and it was Bob Costas who elicited the story from Sam Kinison. Blew me away, totally blew me away.
See, and here's the thing. I of course, love hearing you do Sam, and I didn't even know that it was connected to Bob. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it was. Well, watching Sam on Bob was just a surreal experience for me. As a kid, to know that Bob actually knew about Sam. And actually, it was one of the reasons I've always wanted to shake his hand to have a conversation with him about Sam. I still have yet... I've been around Bob a few times over the years and haven't had the chance to find an opening where I could say hello and shake his hand and try to have a conversation about comedy with him, which I'm looking forward to doing someday, so... You know?
Yeah, I think I might have told you, when I was a young man, before I did stand-up, yeah. I wanted to be a comic. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, I wanted to be a broadcaster. I wanted to be a sportscaster.
Yeah.
Like Costas and Madden and yeah. Cosell, like those were my heroes.
Yeah.
Which is sort of an odd, when you're a kid, not like most people just want to be the players.
Yeah, of course.
Which I think I probably wanted to be.
Yeah.
But can we talk about something else?
Dude, we're at the Super Bowl. We can talk about whatever you want.
When you see a random person like that walk by and you're like, is she a broadcaster? Is she a celebrity? Is she a celebrity's wife? It's really tough to tell.
Yeah, there's beautiful women that are sprinkled out throughout this media center every year. And you don't know who they are, but they're smoking hot. And you're wondering, wow, who is she? And yeah, there's a lot of attention getters around here.
Well, there's a few that are just what I would call like ridiculous. Like there was somebody's... wife or girlfriend, clearly, because she had the kids with her, and she was just like beyond,
yeah.
You know, looks like fucking Suleiman, what's her name, right?
Yeah.
But like that woman that just walked by, like she's regular hot, let's say, not ridiculous.
Well, we're also in Miami where there are women that are so hot that they just make you want to punch yourself in the face.
Right.
And that's all over Miami. There are some women that are so hot here in Miami that you just want to go home. You just want to go home and just like call it. Like
I know what you live in L.A.
Well, but I'm saying go back to your like just call it a night. Stop being outside. Get some pizza.
You know,
go back to your room.
When I was in L.A., let's say the first year, and at some point, like let's say 6 or 9 months later, I had to go to Vegas for something, and I got to Vegas, and I honestly forgot that like Americans were fat, because in LA you can't be that big and walk around, you know what I mean? Like every girl is just ridiculously thin, and I was like, oh wow, yeah, like fat people exist. I totally forgot this,
dude. When I remember being in Melbourne, Australia, and a guy driving me to a radio appearance, and I was just kind of looking at my phone, and we were stopped at an intersection, and he goes, hey, remind you of home? And it was this morbidly obese woman walking across the intersection. I was like, wow, that's what people think of Americans.
Right.
And we are. We're a morbidly obese society, man. But, yeah, that's America, baby. But, I'm just realizing there's a couple things I got to get on the phone about. Sorry about that.
Dude.
No. Wait. Hold on.
Courtney.
Hold on. Court. I'll call you back.
Courtney.
Sorry.
She knows who I am.
Oh, she does?
Yeah.
I thought you were fucking with me.
I am
like...
fucking with you, but I know her.
And then my thing keeps falling apart.
Let's take a quick picture of me and you and send it to her.
All right, cool.
I would never do that to you just randomly. I would never, because it could be some hooah. You know what I mean? I wouldn't do that, but I know Courtney.
My radio
from Boston,
buddies.
From Boston.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
My radio buddies.
We started together, fucking open mics.
My radio buddies are always doing that. My radio buddies are like, come on, put it on the phone. Like if I mention like there's somebody that will come up in conversation, I'm like, yeah, I know that guy. They'll go, let's call him right now. And I'm like, dude, we're not calling that guy right now. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Take a quick photo and we'll send it to her.
All right, we'll take a picture. All right. I got to call her back, though, because I have a... I'm doing a roast.
Is she here?
No. I'm doing a roast of myself for my 50th birthday in 2 weeks. And we're doing it in Maui. And I got all
In Maui?
Yeah. And we're doing... guys from Guns N' Roses, Pearl Jam, System of a Down, Maroon 5, the Goo Goo Dolls.
They're all going to come?
They've all filmed segments for it.
Oh, nice.
And so Courtney is overseeing all the segments for it. So.
Right.
She's producing the roast, and she keeps telling me I need to talk to her, and it's like, shit, I gotta
get on
the
phone. You do need to upgrade your phone, though.
I know, and the
case. You make a few bucks. You can upgrade.
I know. I am. I actually was about to right before I went on this cruise last week. I performed on this rock and wrestling cruise, and I went to the Apple Store to get this thing.
You tied with Jericho?
Yeah, I did a show with Jericho. I've been doing Jericho's podcast a lot lately, and for some reason I've been doing a lot of stuff with wrestlers. Jericho and Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's weird. It's just weird. But, yeah, I've been doing a lot of wrestling stuff. And wrestling fans might be my favorite audience ever.
They're good people.
They just chant fun shit.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So I started going because my kid got into it, and I hadn't been since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it is entertaining.
Yeah.
And the fans, what I love about them is, yeah, they'll, like, whatever's happening, they will just start a chant about. And some of them are the same ones, you know, this is awesome or whatever. But then there's a lot of ones that they'll just make up on the spot that are fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking, it's really, we were in the Bahamas filming a wrestling special. And there was a Disney boat next to us that was taking off. And as it was taking off, everybody started chanting, fuck that boat! Fuck that boat! Fuck that boat!
Right, yeah. It sounds like wrestling fans.
Yeah. It was crazy. But I gotta call them back and get this shit going. So I got to run out of here, man. But,
all right, listen. Good catching up.
Thank you, buddy.
Glad I saw you.
Glad I saw you too, man. What else is on the agenda for you this week at Super Bowl?
I'm going to steal random celebrities that are available. Now, so far, I don't want you to be too impressed. I got the cornhole guy.
I think you're going to say, so far, don't be too impressed. I got Craig Gass.
So I got the cornhole guy, and I got an MMA chick that I hadn't heard of before, but who is apparently pretty good. And now you. So by the end of the week.
So it's all uphill from here.
It is all uphill from here.
All right. Well, good luck. Have fun here at the Super Bowl. And I will see you soon.
Good seeing you, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
How's it going, dude? You can curse, too.
Can I?
Absolutely. Oh, we like the cursing. You grew up where, dude?
Dallas, Texas. So I'm about to curse up a storm because my team ain't here.
Okay. And did you play sports growing up?
I did, man. I grew up. So Texas, we grew up playing basketball and playing football. So that was my thing.
I didn't know there was anything besides football.
In Texas?
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Texas, that's like a religion. Football is like a religion out there.
Right, but I didn't even know y'all balled at all in terms of basketball. Seriously.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, we got great teams. Tamika Catchings, the first female to dunk in the NBA, is from Duncanville, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And so did you play, in school?
I played in school, played for the Army. I played basketball for the Army.
Right.
And now I'm a professional triathlete for the Army, so I've done everything for the Army.
Do you know Robert Killian?
I know of him. I don't know him,
Okay. Yeah. So I'm involved in this obstacle racing world.
Yes.
That he's involved in.
Yeah.
And so how does it even – I'm still not clear on how it works when you say you're an athlete for the Army.
So
– you got to put this a little closer.
So you see my shirt, it says the Army World Class Athlete Program. So
right.
Basically, when you're in the military, especially the Army, and you're able to make the Olympic standard, you become a full-time athlete. Like, you are a professional athlete, especially if you have your pro card.
So okay.
I'm a full-time Paralympic triathlete.
Okay.
The Army pays me to travel the world and to do triathlons.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So were you on the bike before your accident?
No, man. I didn't even know how to swim until I lost my arm.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know how to swim. I didn't learn how to swim. And I initially taught myself how to swim off of YouTube. Like, that's how that all started. And then, you know, going
through
rehab.
Like, how does a one-armed person swim?
Right. Freestyle, like you do.
Okay.
Yeah, I just freestyle and, yeah, just like you do.
So, and then what happens when you, like, isn't it, don't you, like, go unevenly?
Nah, man, it's all core.
It's all core muscles.
Yeah, it's all core, and it's all about my kick, and yeah. So just like you see somebody doing a regular freestyle in the ocean or the lake, the same thing I do. So when I'm swimming, you won't be able to tell, except you might be like, wait, I only see one arm going up. That might be the only difference.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, why did you go that route, triathlon over, I don't know, any other sport?
So to be completely honest with you.
Yes. Don't lie to me, sir.
I won't. There's no black people in triathlon.
There's no black people in obstacle racing either.
True. I'm about to go there next.
It's for real. Honestly, we should talk because they have a whole para thing, and they have a whole world championship for para thing.
Yeah, my friend just went to one in Vegas. I think they had just something.
Yeah, yeah.
Something
who's your friend? Maybe I know him.
Muji.
I don't know Muji.
Yeah, he's a double leg amp. But
so yeah, so they do it in teams and they do it like point style.
Right.
How all that? I don't know exactly how that works, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But obstacle racing's fun anyway. Even if you're not gonna like compete, it's just like it's just a good workout. It's a fun day.
So I've done the trifecta.
You have done the
yeah.
Well, why didn't you just say that when I said Gino Robin Killian?
Well, cause, I mean,
do you know Joe DeSena?
I know, so I know of these people.
Did they interview you? They should have interviewed you. I'm going to make that happen.
We should.
I'm going to make that happen. So Joe DeSena, he has a show called the Spartan Up Podcast.
Okay.
And that's what he does. He talks to amazing people, athletes, business people. You're right up his alley, and he'll probably bring you to something. And
oh, yeah, we should hook that
up. Yeah, for sure.
And then I'll be the only black dude there.
There's no – there, dude, all right, so let's – can we just talk?
Yeah, let's talk. Let's go for it.
Because I've talked to some black athletes about this.
Right.
When it comes to obstacle racing, triathlon, is it, this is my assumption.
No, go for it.
It's two things. One is economics, and two is it's just silly white people shit.
Yes and yes.
Those are my two theories.
Yes and yes. So think about it like this. Typically.
I'm so glad you can keep it. Because listen, these can go, he can have a seat, by the way, your friend. Because listen, some people are here, when it comes to press, some people are like on a mission. And no matter what you ask them, they're going to give you their fucking talking points, and that's it. And some people keep it real. And who wants to talk to a guy that's just keeping that's just a press release? It's just give me a piece of paper. Don't have a real conversation with me.
Right.
So I like you right away. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. So typically, unless you grow up in somewhere like Florida or you know on the coast like California, I mean, you see some black people swimming, but majority of us don't.
Right.
Like, we don't even like to take baths. We take showers.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a chance that we can drown, we ain't having it. So, and I grew up in Dallas. And, yeah, my grandfather had a boat. And anytime I was on that thing, like, if I couldn't see land, I was immediately nervous. So, it was just one of those things. After I got injured, it was just one of those fears I wanted to overcome. And, I just started working hard, started working on it. And being that I've been in the Army already for an extended amount of time, I was already a runner. Once again, cycling. You don't see black cyclists out there.
Right.
We grew up on BMXs and Huffies. Anything past that, nah, that ain't us. You know
right.
what I mean? So there's very far few in between. But once I knew I had the athletic ability to conquer that world or to go for it, I was like, oh, I'm all in. So here I am doing my thing.
So when it comes to triathlon, I know there's Ironman, there's the Olympic distance, there's a bunch of different.
So I've done every distance.
And what do you like doing?
I like doing Ironman distance. It's the longest distance. It's the hardest discipline. But you have time to settle in and catch your opponent. You can make mistakes. So sprint and Olympic, it's not like that. Like, everything counts.
Right.
Everything counts. Transition, everything counts. There's no such thing as making a mistake and being able to catch the next person. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and for me, sprint, that's my discipline. That's, for us, that's Paralympic style. So... zone 5 the entire time, heart rate at like 171, 172 the entire time.
That's serious.
Yeah, it's a little
good. So have you been to Kona or no?
So I qualified for Kona this past year, but I'm trying to get ready for 2020.
Okay.
So
the Olympics.
Yeah. So 2020 is my sight. So going to Kona wasn't in my view, but I've done Texas Ironman. I've done Augusta, Chattanooga. Actually, I've done Texas a couple of times when it was in Austin. Now Waco, done in Chattanooga, Augusta, Georgia, Louisville, and Boulder.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a runner.
Okay.
More than anything. I love obstacle racing, but I actually enjoy running more than most obstacle racers.
Right.
But when you do like 100 Spartan races, you want to try something new.
Right.
So I've tried ultras, and triathlon's definitely on the like, okay, I eventually got to get a bike and focus how to swim.
Right.
But it's definitely up there on a challenge I'd like to take on one day.
You should. I tell a lot of people, I meet a lot of runners that go, I can beat you running. Yes, you can. Without the bike, without the swim and the bike. But when you add everything together, I'm the man. I'll get you.
Dude, the bike, the swim would wear me the fuck out. Even whatever the short distance is for a swim, it's exhausting.
Right. It's a different type of cardio.
It's a whole effing body workout.
Yeah, it's a different type of cardio. Like, I'm here, and like when I drove in, my coach was, I told my coach, I was like, hey, I'm going to be on Radio Row for a week. I'm going to be hanging out. He was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Take your bike, take your wetsuit, take your running stuff because you're going to be training. So I'm up at like 3 o'clock in the morning training.
We got the water.
Yeah, definitely.
I did a little 4 hour. I did a little 4 mile shakeout myself yesterday. Just you know, down the beach and back.
Yeah,
I mean, not the beach, but
yeah, I did like about a four and a half mile tempo run yesterday.
Yeah,
wasn't bad.
We should run together. What are you doing later today? I'm being serious, by the way.
No, we can. Let's run in the morning though. I'm a morning guy. Like I like to knock it out in the morning.
I'm the opposite. I got three kids. I work during the day, then get them from school, and then I usually run like 5-6 o'clock. But to go for a run with you tomorrow, I would do it.
Yeah, because
you already ran today.
Yeah, I already ran today.
Okay, where are you staying? Like nearby?
So right now we're down in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay.
The cost of these hotels is.
I tell you, I use this app called Hotel Tonight, and it drops it way down. But even so I got one for Wednesday and Thursday. Friday. The cheapest one is $5.
Yeah.
Like the cheapest one.
Yeah.
Like they want $1,000 because it's Super Bowl weekend, so they can get it. So, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I got a friend that's staying in Trump Towers, $4,000 a night.
Is he a boxer?
No.
There's some fights here this weekend.
Yeah. I know. Mayweather's here. We seen him riding a bike down. What was that?
I ran by the bus, but that didn't necessarily mean he was here. I saw the Money Team bus, but I was like, but the fighters, what is it? Andrade and those guys are staying. They're staying at the hotel I was in last night and the one next door. Like
Where were you at last night?
I'm pointing as if I know where shit is. Well, it was called. I could look at my app. I don't know.
Mayweather standing in the blue.
Oh, yeah. Of course he is. That's like a famous whatever.
Yeah.
You want to give your friend some love, by the way? Who's this sitting next to me?
Man, this is my guy Gary right here. Man, we've been hanging out all day long. Like, good dude. And you would think we've known each other forever, but you ever meet somebody and they just have a good spirit, a good vibe?
Yes.
That's what that was. We met today.
Right.
And we was like, yo, we're just going to chill today. So, and I'm going to get him to a couple of parties tonight. We're just going to hang out.
Right. What's the big party tonight?
I'm going to do Cigar and Stars, Mike Dicker thing.
Okay.
And then EA Sports is having a big party. So
right.
I go to that every year. And then, I don't know, we'll see. Mayweather's supposed to be having something tonight, actually. So
yeah, my party days are behind me, so... I went to one last year. I went to the Gary V party.
Yep.
And he had, I don't even know, some rappers I didn't even know. But I got a fade that night. That was my memory of that party.
There you go.
They had, I was not aware of this. I'm guessing it's a cultural thing where, like, they have barber chairs set up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, y'all do that?
Yeah.
I've never gotten a haircut at 11 o'clock at night before.
Yeah.
But I got a fade and it looked pretty good.
In Dallas, you can get a haircut in a strip club. Seriously. I ain't playing in this strip club called the Onyx. I ain't messing around for real.
Now Atlanta, we used to be the strip club heaven.
Oh yeah,
but it's dropped down a shade or two.
It has, it definitely has.
So what are you?
I'm trying to go to one here in Miami though. I'm definitely trying to go to one.
Are you not married?
No.
Oh okay.
No.
Face he made.
No.
Yeah, I would be like, here's my credit card, just here. I mean, I would
take it off.
Take my kids' college money. I can't be tempted. Some people can be tempted. I can't.
I just want to see what the
hot mommies look like.
Yeah, man. I hear there's one out here called Tootsies. Tootsies? Yeah.
Are you from here?
Yeah. It's like the size of this room. Can you imagine?
I can't. I cannot imagine.
You probably don't want to.
No. My wife is not going to hear this episode, I don't think, now. Do you want to try anything else? You just want to focus on like after if you get to go to the games and then it's like, all right, maybe now I can try something else.
Man, honestly, bro. So on a serious note, like I just want to be involved in like paying it forward, man. Like I love being around people. I like good vibes. I like the social atmosphere. I like helping people. I like telling my story to inspire, motivate people.
Do you do that? Are you like a lot of speaking gigs?
I do a lot of speaking.
That's some good bread, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't. So this is one thing. So I'm still active duty Army. So the Army says that I can't get paid for it right now. So
when are you out?
I'm probably gonna drop a retirement packet by the end of the summer. Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I have 21 years in, bro. I'm tired.
And when did you lose your arm?
2011.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm the first and only above the elbow amputee in the history of the Army to return to active duty service.
Because they've always been like, all right, you're good, you can.
Yeah, yeah. You lose a limb, they're like, all right, you're gone. Thank you.
Was it hard for you to get back? Was it like a whole?
Oh.
Did the president have to approve it?
Yes.
Have you met Obama?
Yep.
Have you met Obama?
Yes, I have.
Do you wish we still had him?
Every day.
Me too. Every goddamn day.
Obama's the man. I'm going to tell you, when I was around him and his family, bro, I forgot that he was a president.
Really? Because
he's so cool. He's so down to earth. And then Michelle Obama, that woman is gorgeous. That's a beautiful black woman. That is a beautiful black woman. I ain't going to lie to you, bro. I was mesmerized.
So, but tell me how that process went. You were like, I want to get back in.
Yeah.
And people probably said no. And then you had to, like, fill out a form. Like, how does that work?
I wish it was that easy. Nah, man. Like, you got to go through. So, once you get injured in the military, you got to go through, like, this whole medical process, medical evaluations, and all this mental screening and all this stuff. And the whole time I was saying, like, I want to stay. And I had to, like, go through a series of, you know, shooting drills. Like, I just basically had to prove to them that I was still a soldier.
Because you were right-handed.
Right. Yeah. So I had to prove to them I was still a soldier and still capable of leading soldiers and things of that nature. And I mean, I did all of that. But just so happened, I had the opportunity to meet the president, and we had a little chat. And I was like, listen here, brother. I pulled the black card. Listen here, brother.
If there's a time to do it.
Right.
It's with 44.
Why not? Have you seen the commercial?
I don't know what you have planned, but I think you have a huge opportunity to be like something. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously, a lot, like, you could just like, oh, I have this good story, and it's a nice feel good story because I lost mom, and now I'm doing this and that. But like, you actually have a personality. Not everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're funny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think you should, because you can get big bucks on the speaking tour, man.
I would like to. That's my plan, man. We'll see.
How's your IG game?
Oh, it's strong, bro.
Yeah?
Yeah. My IG game is strong. So is my Instagram. I mean, my IG, my Facebook. Yeah,
right.
I'm at 5,000 maximum. So I got an athlete page. So
right. Can you take actually a quick photo of us? Let me get the camera up, and then we'll do
a selfie style or whatever later, too.
All right.
Tell people where to find your social.
Tell people where to find your social channels. Right, you just want to get, like, a picture of us, like, talking, blah, blah, blah.
My Instagram is Michael_DreamChaser_Smith.
Could you make it any longer?
Hey, it's appropriate, though.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I had to make up for the shortcoming.
Right.
My arm. So okay. There you go. And then and then my Facebook is the same thing. It's Michael Dream Chaser Smith. You know what I mean? And
right.
Yeah, that's how they can follow me. And I don't post any personal pictures. I'm a real inspirational type cat. Like, every single day.
Are you getting pictures, by the way?
But no, when I met President Obama, you ever see the skit where the dude is acting like Obama? He goes through and he, like, gives, like, this black hug to everybody, the black handshake, and gets to the white people, and he has that, like, I did the whole embrace. Hey, bring it in, bro.
Right.
Bring it in.
Right.
Yep. Totally pulled the black card. I had to.
Well, listen, let's exchange info.
Let's do it.
Let's go for a run tomorrow morning. What time you run? How early you run?
So I'm running tomorrow morning at 4:30.
Okay, I'm not getting up at 4:30. I thought you were going to say 7?
I'm here by 7. I get up so early.
Who else is here?
Everybody, bro. That's why I was telling one of the younger cats.
I'm clearly not a hustler that I used to be.
Yeah, you're not.
People are here by 7?
So Steven Jackson, Emmitt Smith, Phil Sims. There's a lot of people in here. Tua.
I was in the John yesterday. Last year, I was in the John at the stall. Fucking Eric Dickerson is literally next to me. Literally next to me. And it's like, I'm not going to say hi to Eric Dickerson this second. But, like, as soon as we walked out of the bathroom, I was like, I got a little video with him. I mean, that's what's amazing about being here.
And you didn't even wash your hands, did you? You just ran out the bathroom.
No, I washed my hands. Hi, dude. Good talking to you.
Here you go, Matt. You got me?
I got you.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Perfect.
Ron Jaworski here in lovely Miami Beach.
What if I told you that I'm 47 years old and one of my earliest football memories is Super Bowl 15?
That's great. I think it's great that you love football and you've been involved with the Super Bowl since 1980.
Well, I mean, I don't remember a lot, but I know that that's when I started playing, and I remember watching that game.
Well, it was a disappointing ending, I will tell you that.
Well, for one of us at this table, yes.
Yeah. So you're a Raider fan?
No, come on.
Anytime you get to the Super Bowl, excuse me.
No worries.
It's a great accomplishment. It really is. But it's devastating to lose it. It really is. I mean, it still haunts me this day.
Really?
That we did not win the game.
Do you have nightmares about Kenny King?
No, I really don't have many nightmares about it. I'm just the sheer disappointment of losing that game, expecting to win the game, and the players and coaches that were part of that we weren't successful in our goals to be the world champions. The night before the game, Dick Vermeil addressed our team, and he said, we'll be back here tomorrow night after the game in the same room as the world champions. And we really felt that way. We just didn't play the way we were capable of playing and didn't win the ball game. So it still to this day haunts me that we weren't able to procure that victory.
You've watched as much tape on as many quarterbacks as anybody that I know, okay? I don't know, maybe Gruden. I don't know.
I would say coaches probably watch more. They're paid a lot of money to study their opponents and study their own players.
Well, you know, these guys come out of school, and we seem to say, like, well, it's just a toss-up. You know, you're going to spend this money, and you might get a guy that becomes whoever, or you might just may as well pick a fifth-rounder and then not. What do you, if there's a difference, what do you think it is?
Character.
Person.
Yeah, character.
The man.
Person, the work ethic, more cerebral than physical. And I'll just say an example, like Patrick Mahomes, since he's in this game.
Right.
And coaching, by the way. Patrick Mahomes coming out of Texas Tech, phenomenal talent. I mean, you can see it. I mean, you don't have to be Ron Jaworski studying tape. You watch the game on television, you can see the guy was a special talent. Andy Reid felt he was a special talent. Moves up in the draft to get him. Brings him in, says to him, oh, by the way, you're going to sit the bench year one. All that talent you have, you're going to sit. We got a guy here, Alex Smith. He's the leader of our football team. You need to sit behind him and just get joined at the hip and learn how to run a locker room, how to run a huddle, how to be a leader, how to train, how to practice, how to study tape. You just stay with him. I'll take care of the X's and O's. You stay with him and learn how to be a pro. We've seen too many situations where a guy gets drafted first round. He's immediately the starter. I'm a little old school in this approach. I think a guy coming from college, the transition is so huge to the NFL. And it's not only about the talent. There are a lot of guys that have been just total busts that had talent that have 10-year careers because they didn't understand those intangibles that you have to play the quarterback
position.
But
you know, these coaches, it feels like they're on such a short leash. They're so afraid of getting fired. They want to make the owners happy. They want to sell tickets. So, I mean,
then they shouldn't go into coaching. I'm being honest with you. They shouldn't go into coaching because that's what you live with. Now, if you want to be a coach for a long period of time, you build it. You don't chase a win or two or chase maybe the playoffs.
But they all seem to be doing that.
Not everybody. But it is more common that you see teams draft a quarterback and plug and play them. And, there may be some guys that are that far along, very few and far between, that come out year one and have a phenomenal year. And then sometimes when they do, they fizzle out afterwards. I think you have to have a long-term plan in developing a quarterback in the NFL.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm just going to name somebody particularly, okay? Let's talk about Jay Cutler, for example. Just I'm thinking about, you know, as a fan watching football, and you see this guy who looks like he has the makings of it, and then something happens. What do you think is?
I could give you my opinion because I would agree with the overall talent of Jay Cutler, the physical talent. I mean, no one can throw the ball like Jay Cutler could. He wasn't a leader.
That's what boils down to.
Teammates didn't rally around Jay Cutler. He was kind of a lonesome soul, you know. I mean, never, I think, played the ability that he had at the NFL level. I think he could have been a superstar in this game, but for whatever reason, he never developed all those other intangibles that you have to have. The leadership in the locker room, the leadership in the huddle, you know, how to keep your team motivated. You do the little things to help your team. I didn't see that in Jay Cutler.
But let me ask you this, because not everybody is this extrovert, let's get pumped, Drew Brees kind of a guy. Can a quarterback with the skills, but maybe he's not quite sort of that, if he's more like Eli, like he can get someone else on the team to be that guy, a wide receiver or running back to be the guy who's going to be like, hey, this is our guy. We're going to follow him to the ends of hell, but I'm going to be the cheer you up guy.
Yeah, man, I prefer the guy that fires everybody up. I like a guy to have a little something in his belly. Eli may not have shown that, but I've known him long enough to know that he had a burning desire to excel. He wasn't one of those guys to show it on his face all the time.
Right.
But he did have it. You could ask his teammates about that. You know, he did have it.
Well, one particular teammate said he didn't, but
that's up to them. pretty hard to argue with the career the guy's had and winning two Super Bowls and two MVP trophies.
Right. All right. So, you know, I think when we watch the Patriots the last 20 years, we really still don't appreciate everything it all takes until it's all done, which is, you know, who knows, next year, 5 years,
well,
who knows?
Don't put lump me with that group because, I appreciate everything Brady and the Patriots have done.
Well,
I would not be in that group. I have incredible respect for the success
they've had. Saying that it's, to me, what it shows is it's never just the quarterback. It's never just the coach. There's so many pieces to put it all together and to make the run that they have, to me, again, when we look back, I just think it'll be appreciated more because, again, we've seen so many teams with...
Maybe, like I said, maybe other people.
Not you.
I have a long history of this league and how hard it is to win. I have incredible appreciation for Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and that organization. Now, maybe some people 10 years from now say, wow, what they did was pretty good. I'm not saying that now. I think what they've done is absolutely remarkable.
But this is what I asked everybody last year when they were in the game again. I said, what does Belichick know that nobody else seems to know?
Bill lives football. Not that these other coaches don't. Bill lives football. It's that simple. He has an incredible passion for the game. He lives the game.
But everybody else says they're going to do what he does. We're going to do this next man up thing. And these guys have had 100 running backs you couldn't even mention that have done amazing things for them.
They've had, I don't know how many coaches came from that staff. They were hired because Belichick, and they were going to be the next Belichick. There's only one Belichick. There's only one. The guys hired to be the next guy, bring what Belichick did in New England. There's only one guy. There's only one guy that can do with not Romeo Crennel, not Josh McDaniels. Maybe we'll see with Flores or Vrabel. We'll see how those guys work out. But there's only one Belichick.
Yeah.
You've got to be yourself. You can't be Bill.
How do you think Vrabel did this year?
Just phenomenal. Mike's a phenomenal coach.
And what do you think it takes to stick around as a coach?
Win.
That's it?
Are you kidding me? There's only every coach, and I know all 32 of them. I know most of their staffs. They all know when they take that job, if they don't win, they're gone. That's simple. Just look at the history. These guys aren't dumb.
Right.
They know if they don't win. I talk to these guys like you and I are talking. No media. They know if they don't win, they're getting fired. That's no surprise. They know it. They know when they're getting the fire, they know what to expect.
Do you want to do what you do right now forever?
No, heck no. I'm downsizing now. I'm working on my golf game.
All right. Hey, man, great to meet you.
All right.
Thank you so much, Jaws.
Okay, thanks,
we'll do a quick photo.
So there you have it. There was part one. On the next episode, Mike Pereira, head of NFL officiating, ex-NFL head of officiating, who now does analysis on Fox, who you've most likely seen if you watch any football at all. Matt Berry, the great fantasy football guy, Matthew Berry, and Jennifer Langton, who's on the health and safety committee for the NFL. That's coming up the next episode. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run. See you around, ATL.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.